Good morning. On today's programme, Canada promises to boost spending on defence and the concerns of Parisian Catholics for the future of private schools. But first we go to India. A mother's desperate appeal has mobilised Indians to raise a staggering 3.8 million euros as blood money to save an Indian man from execution in Saudi Arabia. Rahim, a native of India's Kerala state, was sentenced to death after accidentally killing a boy in Riyadh. The boy's family agreed to pardon Rahim in exchange for 3.8 million euros, which was miraculously crowdfunded by Kerala state in a race against time after Rahim's mother appealed to save her son and bring him back to India. Sajida Momin reports.
The residents of Kerala, a state in South India, have raised a whopping 350 million rupees, which is approximately 3.8 million euros, as blood money to save Abdul Rahim from being executed in Saudi Arabia. Rahim, who hails from Kerala, was recruited as a driver in Saudi Arabia way back in 2006. He was 26 years old at that time. But as misfortune would have it, within a month of landing a driver-cum-caregiver's job in the Saudi capital of Riyadh, the disabled teenage boy under his charge died inside the car when his life support machines were accidentally switched off. The boy suffered from a rare health condition that had left him paralyzed from the neck down. Rahim was immediately arrested and thrown into prison, cutting short his life's ambition of working hard and living happily in a foreign land. In 2018, after a long trial, a Saudi judge convicted Rahim for murdering the 15-year-old and sentenced him to death. Rahim's pleas that the boy's death was unintentional fell on deaf ears. His legal appeals against the death sentence were rejected. Rahim's fate, in a sense, was sealed when the death penalty was upheld last year by the apex court, which ordered Rahim's beheading. The boy's family, too, refused to pardon Rahim. After a lot of persuasion, the Saudi family ultimately relented, but demanded the staggering sum of 340 million rupees as blood money for granting amnesty. After all efforts by the Indian government to mediate between the impoverished Rahim and the victim's family drew a blank, Rahim's relatives, especially his 70-year-old mother, appealed in desperation to the people of Kerala to save his life. The emotionally charged appeal by Rahim's mother to raise the 340 million rupees triggered an all-out crowdfunding drive, with people from Kerala living all over the world generously chipping in to achieve the target, which at one stage appeared to be well beyond their reach. After nail-biting suspense, the monetary target was met just 3 days before April 18, when Rahim was due to be beheaded. As things stand, Rahim has got a reprieve. The complicated process of transferring the blood money to Saudi Arabia is now underway, so that Rahim can walk free after spending 18 long years behind bars. But according to media reports, legal formalities will still take a few months before he can board a flight to Kerala, where his old and ailing mother, who moved heaven and earth to give her son a new lease of life, is waiting anxiously to hold him in her arms. Rahim's mother's appeal mobilized several civil society organizations in Kerala into forming an action committee to raise the blood money. In March, the action committee launched an app, Save Abdul Rahim, to channelize crowdfunding efficiently and in a transparent manner. Importantly, the fundraising campaign for Rahim, who happens to be a Muslim, cut across Kerala's religious divide in an election season when politicians use religion as a tool to harvest votes. Hindus comprise 54% of Kerala's population, while Muslims and Christians account for 26% and 20% respectively. India's ruling Bharatiya Janata Party, which has a Hindu-first agenda, has so far made no headway in Kerala, although it is running the federal government since 2014 with Narendra Modi as the Prime Minister. Kerala has the distinction of voting in the first communist state government in India soon after independence, which probably explains its secular and liberal character and traditions which have stood the test of time. The state, which boasts of the highest literacy rate in the whole country, has so far kept sectarian forces at bay, with Hindus, Muslims and Christians coexisting peacefully. The spirit of brotherhood is very infuriating for religion-centric political parties, but the people of Kerala steadfastly refuse to let religion divide them. Parliamentary elections are underway in India, but there is a very high probability that the Bharatiya Janata Party will not win a single seat in Kerala, although it is expected to do well in other states where religion plays a part in electoral politics. Ashraf Wengat, a businessman from Kerala based in Saudi Arabia, who returned to Kerala to steer the fundraising drive for Rahim, says that the campaign brought together people from different faiths to collect the staggering sum. According to him, there are Hindus, Muslims, Christians and members of all political parties, including Narendra Modi's Bharatiya Janata Party, in the committee formed to save Rahim's life. Rahim's mother, too, told the media that the communal harmony among people in Kerala helped collect such a huge amount so quickly. For World Report, I'm Sajida Momin in India.
To Canada next, and this spring, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has announced billions of dollars more for the country's military. On paper, the numbers are huge, $73 billion by 2044. And the Prime Minister has hinted that there'll be more military spending announcements to come. But some critics say it's still short of the 2% of gross domestic product, which is the NATO benchmark for defence spending by its members. More from Dan Karpenchuk in Toronto.
Trudeau calls it our North, strong and free policy, and the aim is to take on a greater role in the far north over the next 20 years as climate change and what Trudeau calls increasingly aggressive foes threaten Arctic sovereignty. Trudeau made the announcement flanked by his Defence Minister Bill Blair and Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland at Canadian Forces Base Trenton, located on the north shore of Lake Ontario. The Prime Minister said technological advances and cyber attacks mean there are myriad ways for engagement that go far beyond traditional borders. He referred directly to China and Russia as disruptive powers and concluded that NATO's northern and western flank is now the Canadian Arctic. The new defense policy document, which is described as a renewed vision for Canada's defense, came as part of Trudeau's announcement, suggests Canada needs to be ready to defend itself under the ice as well as on land and in the air. Trudeau said this new policy is about preserving Canada's values of democracy, freedom, peace, and fairness for the next generation, so they can enjoy the same security and prosperity that was given to us by our parents and grandparents. He says growing challenges to the international order that has long protected Canada's prosperity and the rapid pace of technological change is affecting Canada's national interests. So Trudeau said the Canadian government would spend more than $8 billion over the next 5 years and $73 billion within 20 years. In the short term, there would be vehicles adapted to the frozen north, as well as an Arctic satellite ground station and several northern operations hubs. The Canadian Armed Forces is establishing a new cyber command, which will work in conjunction with the Communications Security Establishment in Ottawa. Maritime surveillance technology to detect and monitor underwater activity, new tactical helicopters, and global satellite networks are also on the list. Money will also be allocated to ramping up production of artillery ammunition, early warning aircraft, and long-range missiles. The policy shows annual defense spending doubling between 2016 and 2026. Military spending will be boosted to 1.76% of GDP by 2030, still short of NATO's expectations of 2%. The new defense plan also includes the purchase of conventionally powered submarines, and Trudeau did not close the door on a nuclear-powered option, saying the government would look at submarines that are most appropriate for Canada's responsibility in protecting the longest coastline in the world, and certainly the longest Arctic coastline in the world. The updated defense policy was promised 2 years ago in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and it also highlighted shortages and weaknesses in Canada's military. Recruitment for the military has plummeted. Retaining personnel has also been a challenge, and that's led to a crisis in the armed forces with more than 16,000 positions unfilled, and about 10,000 troops haven't been given enough training for deployment. Defense Minister Bill Blair is looking into those issues, but already staff have identified several factors keeping Canadians from joining the military, among them frequent postings, a lack of spousal employment opportunities, limited health and child care, and housing and relocation costs. The government has set aside money for a housing strategy and a childcare policy, and it has promised to speed up the recruitment process. It's an ambitious plan for a party that has rarely made military spending a big priority, and the opposition Conservatives were quick to slam it, calling it desperate, with most of the money to be spent in later years. One critic said Trudeau is again kicking the can down the road by committing most of the defense spending in the announcement and after the next federal election, expected in 2025. For World Report, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
Finally, we go to France, and as the city of Paris prepares to put in place its 15-year urban plan, and in the same year as the Olympic Games come to town and the restoration of the Notre Dame Cathedral is expected to be complete, the Catholic Church is voicing strong concerns over plans by the socialist mayor, which they say will endanger the existence of Paris's private Catholic schools, where some 80,000 pupils attend. Connor Power reports.
While positive Olympic fever continues to surge through Paris, no greater symbol of optimism can be found in the French capital than the site of the near-completed, refurbished Cathedral of Notre Dame. Its rebirth is something that most experts didn't think was possible in so short a time frame. There is no monument quite so beloved as this one, a Catholic property at the very heart of the original settlement from which the modern secular city of Paris has grown. Behind the scenes, across the river at Paris's Hôtel de Ville, or City Hall, the office of the Paris mayor is going through the final stages of the process of setting out, agreeing and putting into action a 15-year urban development plan. Known as the PLU, or the Plan Local d'Urbanisme, or Local Urban Plan, it is billed as a bioclimatique one, a socialist-led plan with the environment and climate action very much to the fore in its objectives. While it is broadly welcomed by the denizens of this city, there are those who have found fault with the plan, and the voice that is crying non, the loudest, is that of the Catholic Church. You have to go back in French history quite a number of decades since the last time that the Église catholique in France has had any kind of political influence. Now, however, their concerns are being echoed across this beautiful capital by religious members and educational board members of Catholic schools, as well as the parents of almost 80,000 pupils that attend private Catholic education in the city. Current Mayor Anne Hidalgo is no friend of the Catholic Church, according to Jean-François Conteneur, the CEO of Catholic Education in Paris organization. As a consequence of the PLU, he says, a number of the sites where their schools are located will have to be given over to social and affordable housing. Between 30% and 100% of these sites are potentially going to be affected by the grand plans of the mayor's office, he maintains, if any of these buildings undergo new construction, major restoration, extension, or an alteration of use. It would not be possible, for example, for us to carry out work plans to improve accessibility or to conform with other educational standards without putting the very existence of those educational establishments in peril, Mr. Conteneur said in a recent interview with Catholic newspaper Paris Notre Dame. Taking the plan as it is written, he says, seems to prevent the school from expanding. While the mayor's entourage assure him that this is not the case, he needs absolute clarification around what he says are the extremely complex procedures of this PLU. What's even more worrying from our point of view, adds Mr. Conteneur, is that all of this comes in the context of our relationship with the current team of the Mairie de Paris, whose stance towards private Catholic education is, to say the least, hostile. Although the fortunes of France's Socialist Party have waned dramatically in recent decades, Paris has had a socialist mayor for the last 23 years, and current mayor Anne Hidalgo has held the office in a popular run that has lasted 10 years. Amongst her achievements have been the continual slashing of car parking spaces in the French capital, as well as more bicycle lanes, more green areas, and the promise to make the metro a 24-hour service. The daughter of Spanish political emigres who had to flee fascist Spain, Ms. Hidalgo is a confirmed atheist and says that the days of driving your car from one side of Paris to the other are over. Margot Dupertron, press attaché of Paris City Hall, says in response that there will be no interruption to the service of the schools. Moreover, says Ms. Dubertin, it is possible for them to carry out any kind of necessary work on any of the schools without running the risk of an occupation order by the mairie. This setup is designed more to protect the institutions from property market pressures, she says, by guaranteeing a preferential usage for social housing if a transformation of use were to happen. It offers, she says, an additional layer of protection against excessive property speculation. This is significant in the case of such properties being put on the market because, if this happens, then it's the social housing scheme that will get first preference. Mr. Contenor and company remain unconvinced. But the devil will be in the detail of the plan as it is due to come into effect by the end of this year. By that time, coincidentally, the most beloved and powerful Catholic symbol of Paris, Notre-Dame Cathedral, will be open once again to the City of Light and to the whole world. For RTÉ World Report in Paris, this is Conor Power.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.